Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wished for something with all your heart, but didn't have the words or the vision to call it into existence? Don't feel like a lone ranger. There are countless souls wandering around aimlessly, looking for their missing pieces in life that will complete their big picture of living an abundant, radiant, and thriving life. Today, each and every person suffers from I.O., information overload. We are bombarded with never-ending words. However, I.O. leaves us asking, now what? Where do I go from here? Where do you go to consciously find your way to receive the answers you desire, to improve your life, health status, your proper lifestyle, your family's health and welfare, is to the now what, where do I go from here? The Star Waters and Sandy Rogers Show, airing each Thursday from 2 to 3:30 p.m., is where you'll find your answers. Star and Sandy know how confusing it is having this expert or that health professional barking at you with their opinions of what they know you should be eating, which pill for every ill is just right for you, or what you should be thinking about the availability of your time when it comes to providing healthy food for you and your loved ones. When you are constantly convinced that you lack the time to prepare your own food made with ingredients you purposely add and know it is safe and nutritious, you are now being programmed to eat fast, eat processed, because you're too busy. Don't believe the hype. Together, these wellness advocates will provide cutting-edge information, straight, no chasers, to educate you and give you the words and vision to ask the question, now what? Where do I go from here?
Hello, everybody. Greetings and welcome to Now What? Where do I go from here? And you've got your two lovely, lively moderators, Star Waters, also known as the Wellness Wizard, and me, Sandy Rogers, a.k.a. the Wellness Gangster. So together, we have 100 years plus of firsthand personal knowledge and experiences of reversing what most call chronic diseases, or at least the diseases that are aimed at taking us out. So we're on the other side of that. And so our conversations are always a must listen to, because we have the best minds in the healing fields to come and talk with us as well. And so today is no different. We have an exceptional guest who I get to introduce shortly. But first, we do things in order. So we always, always, forever give thanks to our ancestors, to all the ancestors, for their many gifts and their tremendous blessings that they bring to us. We know that we stand on their shoulders. We stand on their shoulders for strength, for knowledge, fortitude, resilience, determination, power, just all of that. And we also understand that now that we know better, we can do better, because we follow their golden wisdom to health and wellness, and they've laid the path and journey for us. So with that, we give thanks, we give thanks, we give thanks. Ah, shay. Well, thank you.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you for joining with us today. And we invite you to talk with us online, live, if you would like to, by calling in on 516-531-9819, and you will press 1 to let us know you want to speak live on air with us. Now, to ensure the best quality on our playbacks, because most of our listeners do go back and listen to our shows over and over, we ask that once you make your statement, comment, contribution to the conversation heard, that you mute your phone so that there's no background noise interfering with the playback quality. And so, again, thank you for being with us today. Now what? Where do I go from here? Sister Star?
Hey, hello, everyone. How are you today? Boy, do I have some words of wisdom that's going to uplift us and take us to the next level. So let me begin. To be who you are and become what you are capable of is the only goal worth living. And that's a quote from Alvin Ailey. Life is not hopping from mountaintop to another because there is a valley in between. At times, the valley is a job you hate and need to feed the family. The valley might be a failing or toxic relationship. The valley could be a child who goes astray or a friend who betrays you. The valley could be illness or a death of a loved one. The valley is dark and frightening, but there is value in the valley. When you are in the valley, you begin to muster the strength and power buried deep within you. In the valley, you begin to think, pray, tap into your incredible divine self. The valley gives you a time to rest, to heal, rejuvenate your being. It is an opportunity to look up and see and remember those powerful mountain climbers who made it before you, your grandmother, your hero, even yourself. You have been in the valley before. Remember what you did, how you got up and out? Let the thoughts and memories of that success be the rope you use to pull yourself up. And also, the valley is the coronavirus. Oh boy, the valley. The affirmation is, I am taking time to learn the value of the valley. And that's by Yana Van Zandt in her book, Acts of Faith.
Ashe. And she's got a book by that same title, Value in the Valley.
Yes,
awesome,
she does. Star.
Very appropriate. I wrote that down, valley equal rest. That was cool. That was cool.
Thank you
so much. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And so I know we're all excited about our speaker, and our topic for today is called Secrets from the Barn, right? Like, what secrets are in the barn? I don't know about that kind of stuff. So, but our guest does, and his name is Mr. Tom Hall. And as a child, Tom grew up in Iowa on his father's dairy farm. From a young age, he learned the ins and outs of what all it took to put meat on your plates, milk in your glasses, cheese on your burgers, and ice creams next to your birthday cake. After graduating from college, Tom returned home and became the farmer owner of his own dairy farm. So he's going to talk to us today about how running that business and how it supplies the basic food needs of American families, how it impacted his family's life, as well as how the finished products impacts American families' health, the health of American families. Tom is now living fully as a committed plant-based man. So I know you want to hear how that change came about, right? Hearing his phenomenal journey will leave you like a wide-eyed kid during story time in school. So welcome to the show, Mr. Tom Hall.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Star and Sandy. It is so good to be here. And thank you for inviting me. I don't know if I have any questions, but I know I'm talking to wise people, so I think I'm going to learn more than I can give. So we'll see.
I don't know much about being on a dairy farm, so
I was only on one for maybe half a day as a little girl, maybe around the age of about 7 or 8, when I went to Penrose Dairy in Portland, Oregon, and actually got a chance to touch and feel and squeeze and tug on the cow's udders. And it's like, wow, I still remember it. I remember how they felt warm. So, that was the experience. But to do that every day, at what age were you in the barn and doing chores, and what did those chores look like, Tom?
Well, that is, I was there from the beginning. Let me make a little correction, because I'd like to identify then with Star as she was in Portland. It was actually Washington, not Iowa, that I grew up. So it was across the river from Oregon, but that's all right. But no, I grew up there as a baby, actually. So, and it was just like when I had my children. We took them out to the barn and we set up a place where they could go to sleep and we could watch them. And so it was just a natural thing to go out and be with the cows and around the cows. And as you grow up, you know, you begin to do more things with them. You help feed them, you help move them, you help, you know. At that time, we had buckets, so we milked the cow into the bucket, and so I couldn't carry the bucket, of course, until I got quite a bit older, and then we dumped that bucket into the tank. But you know, you get to see everything with the cows. You watch them calve. You get to play with the calves because we raised our own replacements, so. You know, I have to say that with a little bit of tongue in cheek. We raised the female calves. We sold the male calves, and they went into veal or beef. And so some of the things that were said is true, that we take the calves away from the cows within 3 days. And move them into a calf pen or take them to the auction and sell them. Those are the male calves would go to the auction. So those are the things that, and then we had a garden too. So
the majority of the beef that we eat, Tom, is from the male cows or calves?
No, okay, well, it depends on how you want to look at that. You're absolutely right. It could be. If you are eating McDonald burgers, Burger King burgers, Wendy burgers, or any other burgers that have come from a fast food place, the chances are you are eating dairy cows, whether that be the male calves that have grown up, or whether it be old dairy cows that have just gone in and they were sold into beef. you have to remember the average age of a dairy cow is about 5 years, 5 to 6 years of age, when they are terminated at the dairy and moved into beef. So if you're eating fast food burgers, yeah, you're getting the dairy cows, the expended dairy cows, and probably the male calves that have grown into something besides veal. So other than that, the beef that you buy in the store with the different cuts, the steaks, the ribs, the briskets, et cetera, that's going to come from your beef cows and your beef animals, whether they be male or female. Those are different. Those are just different breeds of cows. That's all.
Okay. Okay.
I want to say treat. Maybe that's not the right word, but maybe it is the right word. How do they treat each of those categories of cows to prepare them for the meat that we then eat later? So do they treat the dairy, the cows that produce the milk different, and do they feed them differently than they do the steers that end up being the steaks on our table? And then how do they treat the babies that end up being veal? And you can tell us about why they use babies for veal too.
Well, you know, I've always wondered why they answer that, the last question first, and so that's first in chronological order. You know, the babies went into veal. I don't know. I never raised veal. I raised calves on that would go on into the beef market. But for veal, as I watched and saw, the veal calf was held to the one that was going to go into veal was held to liquid diet milk. And it was usually kept in a dark place, you know, so that's why the meat was very light in color, not because of the darkness, but just because of the milk primarily. And at about 5 months of age, they would butcher the calf. Now, that's a full-grown cow. A full-grown cow achieves maturity at about 2 years. So you're looking at about a quarter of the way to maturity for the calf that will be butchered for beef. Growth hormones, I do not know if they were used in beef or in veal. They are used in beef, in those that are going into beef, and they're fed primarily. You know, you'll get some range that they'll put the beef animals or the steers, the dairy steers out on a range land till about their a year, and then they'll bring them in and put them in a feedlot to fatten them on grain. And all this time, they are on hormones for the most part. That just came as I was getting out of the business. The acceptance of the growth hormone to be injected into the animal, you know, that's in addition to the growth hormone that comes with milk. And a beef calf will stay on her mother for 9 months, and so she got that one is also getting their growth hormones from the milk. Now, consequently, if you stop and think about that, we're getting the cow's growth hormones too, as if we drink the milk. So,
wow,
that just takes us back right into the dairy industry, where the calf then is raised in anticipation of becoming a milking cow, and so those are the female calves, and we raise them I had to clean calf pens. That's the worst thing on a dairy. But and I say that because the calf pens didn't get clean, but at the end of winter. So we just kept putting on more straw, more bedding, and so they were just piling up on their own excrement. You're absolutely right.
Wow.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that's really something.
Well,
and,
isn't that somewhat better than what's happening now? I mean, you know, with the factory farms that, you know, that's going on now on a major level, do they even get the straw on top and all of that? I mean, I've seen in some of those, you know, videos that have been taken and then given out to the world, that these animals sometimes are up to their body in waste matter. You know, I mean, when they go to slaughter, all of that's on them. You know, they didn't get a bath or anything like that. It's just, you know. So at least back in the day when you were a cattle farmer, it seemed to have been a little bit more cleaner. Or can you talk about that?
Well, yes, and yeah, that's you know, there's two areas in here as we think about this. There is the beef industry, and then there is the dairy industry, and there is the dairy male, which became a steer, and it went into the beef industry. So with the dairy, where we had to make sure those calves were healthy, you know, we did things accordingly. Now, as we progressed over time, we actually got rid of the calf pen, where we had several calves in one place, and we just piled up the bedding, and to moving them into individual pens, and there's two ways of doing that. We had individual pens where they could. It was probably going to be about a 4x8 pen. And so a calf could get up and move around, and actually it's outside. And the other way you would do that to raise it would be almost like a veal style, where the calf would be on a raised grate. So the waste of the calf, the bowel movements and the urination would go through the flats into something that would be washed away from them. So, and those, but the calves wouldn't be able to turn around very much. So it was a mass production. You're absolutely right. I grew up on a small dairy. We only had, when I was growing up, we had 50 cows. We expanded to 180 before I came back to it. And that's about where I held it when I came back to it also. And, so we had plenty of room to put them outside and raise them also outside. But the feedlot, where the beef animals go, that's a different story. You know, you're right. The animals are, I don't understand it. I really don't. They could be belly deep. Now, I know in the wintertime, we have a lot of mud in western Washington. We'd get 100 inches of rain a year. And as the calves would, and the heifers in this case, which are the immature females, as we would raise them and breed them, they would come to the barn and eat, and they could get inside. But I tell you, the mud got pretty deep on the outside to get into the barn. So in the wintertime, that's just one of those things that we had where we were. The excrement that they lived on, we moved away from those communal pens and went to the individual pens. And that really accentuated the health, anyway, albeit not the exercise, But the health of the calf until they were old enough to get out and eat some grass, which wouldn't be too long. They would either eat grain and milk for, I don't know, 5 months, 3 months, 4 months. Then we'd move them out. So there, but the difference is in the dairy industry, you needed a healthy calf to raise and to breed and to make, get that calf to come to into milk production at 2 years of age. So we did a lot of things that would prevent disease in that respect, because a sick calf or a sick cow made you no money. So, and if you had to call the vet out, that's even, you're making even less money. So we look at the dairy industry a little different, because we can't put antibiotics into milk producers, because that will show up in the milk and consequently we wouldn't get paid for our milk. And that's another story we can talk about a little bit later if we want, but right now we're talking about getting there. So for the most part, the dairy industry, at least that I was a part of, and in the western half of Washington, where it was extremely wet, those were the mud situations, and those were the raising situations.
And I've always thought that cows ate hay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started looking at documentaries and seeing that they started feeding the cows corn. And from that, it caused problems in the cows, because I guess their systems just don't gravitate to the corn, doesn't digest it well, and then they get infections. So what happened with the switch from the hay to the corn? And is corn actually what they're feeding cows now today?
Okay, so there's again two things you have to think about on these things and look at what you're looking at on those. There's a different way of raising beef as opposed to raising dairy and the milking cow. They are two different rations, as we would call it. I grew up in college, and we had to balance a ration for the dairy animal, and we needed so much fiber. And if we didn't get enough fiber into that cow, now we're going to talk about fiber for ourselves, right? If we didn't get enough fiber into that cow, the cow would be constipated. The cow would have diarrhea. It works both ways. And so you treat it the same way, you get the cow more fiber, more grass. So when you actually feed too much grain, and corn in this case, corn is a high energy feed, there is no doubt. And that was our primary source of energy, as opposed to protein and fiber. Corn has very little fiber and very little protein. So corn is primarily an energy source. So if you have to balance the protein and the fiber in a dairy animal, along with the energy, along with the grain, you have to keep that animal into production. You can't give her too much grain. You can't give her too much corn, because the corn on that dairy animal is going to do the same thing as the corn in a beef animal. It's going to put on a lot of fat. And, you know, just as with humans, if we put on a lot of fat, it restricts your digestive system. It restricts your lungs. It restricts everything that that you're trying to do as far as life goes. And so when we're looking at beef animals, you're trying to get that calf into a beef animal by age 18 months. Now, I said a dairy animal is 2 years. So we're trying to get that, they're trying to get that beef calf into an animal that can be put in the slaughterhouse and on the shelf in the grocery stores at age of 18 months. So they're feeding a lot of grain. So if you stop and think about that, yes, that's going to be hurting that beef animal. But they're not thinking too much of that because it's not going to live very long. They're, the dairy animal on the other side, we want that cow to be producing for 3 years minimum. Well, I shouldn't say minimum. That was the average life of the dairy animal, milk producing for 3 years. So you've got an animal that starts at milk producing at 2 years. So the average life then, age of the cow that at termination of the dairy industry, in the dairy industry, was 5 years to 6 years of age. Some live longer, and we keep them dependent upon their milk production. So yeah, so there is a difference in what you're looking at in terms of the animals that they're feeding. If you're feeding dairy animals, and if all you see is going into them is corn, they're not producing that cow. That cow needs fiber. That cow needs that hay that you were talking about. And when they switch from the hay, and that used to be what it was in the beef industry, but if you're fattening the calf, you're pouring in the grain. And you're going to interrupt the immune system. And this sounds like humans, doesn't it? You're going to interrupt your digestive system. You interrupt the flora in the bacteria, the good bacteria in the intestines. You create constipation. You create diarrhea. You create sicknesses. You're absolutely right. So, but in the dairy industry, when you want the cow to go a little bit longer, you feed them a little bit better. So those, that's just some of the difference. But when you see those films on that beat, take a look and are they, you know, you have to know your breeds of cows. So in the dairy industry, you're going to be looking for a black and white cow or a brown cow or a gray cow and a red and white cow. Those are Guernseys, Brown Swiss, Jerseys, and Holstein. And those are your primary. And if you're seeing those, then it's a dairy business. You're probably going to have a mixture of corn silage, which is the stock made into fee, which is high fiber. And they're going to be a mixture of hay and silage, which is a damp hay, which is a wet hay. So that's how they get their fiber. They'll feed them a total ration. That's the difference in feeding beef versus dairy.
Oh, boy. Well, gee, already I've learned a lot. I remember seeing this one documentary, and I think it talked about corn. That was the whole issue or subject of the documentary. And it was talking about how people have like a resistance to corn, or they're allergic to corn. Where it was showing up in their hair, you know, people would take their hair and get it analyzed, and corn would be in their hair from all the beef that they were ingesting. So when you just got through telling you the feeding schedules of these different animals, it made me think you definitely are what you eat. They're feeding the animals particular we're eating the animals, and we inherit, we get all the stuff that the animals got, you know.
Yes.
But we're going to live a lot longer than 3 years, 18 months, all of that kind of stuff, and it just keeps recycling and getting worse and worse and, you know, getting on top of each other, and it's like, wow, there's just no way that we can get away from it as long as we're eating that. So,
Tom, I would like to ask a question regarding the corn that Star is speaking of. Is it true, I'll state it like that, that the corn that are that's used to feed the animals, it's 90% of it is GMO, or all of it is GMO? It's not a natural, I call it natural, but it's a genetically modified ingredient, right?
You know, there's the common knowledge of GMOs is that the corn has been changed to reject the effects of herbicides, for instance, and that's
mm-hmm.
like Roundup. And when I was growing up, we genetically modified our animals by breeding. We selected for certain traits. You could select, you know, you select your bull from a history. You have a history of that bull and its family that it came from, and you selected for traits, and then that way you modified the genes in your calf. But today's common usage of that term is where herbicides are placed either in the plant or rejection thereof in the plant, so they can use herbicides on those plants. And that, yes, 99% of the animal corn that goes to animals is probably GMO corn in that respect. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
And we're going to reap the benefits of that by that's fed to the animals, and we are what we eat, and those animals are eating that genetically modified corn. The standards are such that we'll accept certain levels of herbicides. In your foods, and so when that is said, really what you're talking about is except for the in beef, but yeah, dilution is the solution. You know, the more you dilute it,
dilution.
Dilution is the solution in all these regulations. If you can accept a certain level, and you've got a higher level than that, then what you need to do is dilute it you can dilute a hamburger with a hamburger that doesn't have that much in it, depends upon where they come from, or you can dilute the milk from certain things, and we can talk about that also. But you have the problems that come with genetically modified grains and hays and grasses and soybeans in our food supply. There is no doubt.
Thank you.
I know so many children have allergies and all of these skin problems and all of that. And now that I'm hearing you speak on this, I'm wondering if what, you know, they give the animals
has a lot to do with that.
I can't help but say it does. And I tell you, with that picture that you just sent me.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, the dairy industry. Dairy. You know, we've heard Dr. Mills talk about it. We've heard Ruby Lathan talk about it. We've heard Neil Barnard and John McDougall, Michael Greger, all talk about what is in the dairy product and how dairy products, how milk. If you want to know why I got out of the dairy industry and what I'm doing now, these are the reasons. Because dairy exacerbates any and all allergies. And it can be allergies just that are within the milk itself. You know, it can be hormones that's in the milk. You have to stop to realize that the milk that we're drinking has all the hormones and that is needed for the baby calf.
Mm-hmm.
We're milking that cow for 9 months. I'm sorry, 10 months. The cow calves, and then we milk that cow for 10 months, and we give her 2 months rest while she is getting close to having another calf. We breed that cow. We breed that cow after she's calved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three to 4 months later. So then that cow is pregnant while you're milking her. She's
wow.
also producing hormones for the calf, for her new for the calf that's growing in her belly. And consequently, that gets into the milk. So you've got all sorts of things that are going on in the cow when that milk is made for the calf. And we're ingesting that. So yes, you allergies. If we have hormonal allergies, can be some of it caused by that. Dairy exacerbates even plant allergies. And in fact, if we got off of dairy, if we got off of animal products, the chances of us being allergic to plant food is minimal. And so if we have allergies to pollen, if we have asthma, if we have allergies to food stuff that are plant-based, it's because of the animal products that we're eating. You know, there are going to be those occasions where those exceptions, so the outliers in this case, rather than the norm, they would become outliers if we were off the animal products, and those people that are allergic to plant-based food would be outliers. Yeah. They would be.
You know, that's so interesting. That's so interesting that you would say it, because I know few people that have allergies to plants or, you know, plant-based eating. But I remember a young lady that, you know, just kind of freaked out because one of the dishes I had prepared had avocado. And she was like, oh, no, I'm allergic to avocado. And it just kind of really struck me because I had never heard of anybody being allergic to, you know, a natural product like that. So now I understand, you know, what could have been the trigger for her with that allergy. So I really appreciate that. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a question that whenever you see something like that or someone says something like that, I ask them, are you eating dairy?
Okay.
Are you eating milk? Are you eating cheese? Let me tell you a little bit about my wife with cheese. Now, this, you know, allergies develop over time, right?
Right.
Yeah, your body just finally gets tired of it or the but dairy,
I can't take anymore.
Dairy gets in the way. Dairy gets in the way of especially plants. But dairy itself will develop we can develop allergies. My wife had a rash on her hand, on one hand, and then on her neck and chest. And that rash raised up. I mean, it was not only just red, it raised the skin. She went to the doctors. The doctors prescribed cortisone shots,
right.
they beams and everything else, and they never got rid of it. We, at this period of time, decided, you know, we've got to get off of the animal food, but the things that we were studying, I actually got started in this direction from studying about an alkalarian diet and discovered what causes the alkaline and what causes acidic residues in our body. And I don't like to be sick. And so we stopped. My wife stopped eating cheese. When she stopped eating cheese, that rash left.
Wow.
Her hand, neck, and her chest, it left. The skin went back to normal. You couldn't even tell that there was a rash. She had that rash for a year.
Wow.
Oh, and it would itch. It all went back to normal. I tell you, you can't, if you were to look at her hand now, especially, you couldn't tell which hand had the rash on it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's cheese. And that's our reaction to the dairy in this case. But yes, when you have an avocado resistance or an allergy,
mm-hmm.
ask them if they're eating animals. Yes.
I will.
Dairy.
See, now I'm equipped with knowledge that I can ask.
mm-hmm.
Yep. So you said you were going to talk to us about the antibiotic, the towels. Is now a good time to bring that up? Okay.
Yes. That's an interesting story. Let me start. I said we grew up. I went through school, and a healthy cow or a sick cow makes you no money.
Right.
Because when you treat a cow with antibiotic, you can't market that milk because the antibiotic winds up in the milk. So we cannot market the milk intentionally from a treated animal. So what we're saying then is that we have to separate, if we treat a cow for any sickness, we have to separate that cow from putting that milk into the milk tank. Now, we're not going to quit milking that cow, because as soon as you start milking the cow, she's going to stop producing milk. You know, when your child quits nursing, you're not going to produce as much milk. And the same with the cow, when you're not taking the milk, you're going to be milking that cow while she's being treated.
Okay.
So if that milk, by some chance, through an accident, through the neglect, gets into the milk supply and gets into your milk tank, it's going to have antibiotic in it. Let me tell you what happens. Then the milk truck comes and picks up your milk. They take a sample of that milk. And they, in order to detect antibiotic, they have to culture it. Culturing milk is pretty simple. It's a natural culture medium for bacteria. So they take it and put it in a lab and see if they can grow any bacteria in that sample of milk that they took from your milk tank. Now, that tank that they just came and picked up went into the tanker with a whole bunch of other dairies' milk. So that is that milk is already into that tanker of milk. It may have antibiotic in it. Now they get to the processing plant, and that milk is put into a silo. This is all in one day's work of a milk truck driver. Goes and picks up the milk, takes the sample, puts the sample in a jar, takes it back to the processing plant, and dumps the milk into a silo of thousands of gallons of milk. And then he has to get that tanker washed out and to go out and do the same thing the next day. So in the meantime, they're going to culture that sample of milk they took from your tank. That's going to take a day to 2 days. So let's say they find that there was antibiotic in your milk because they couldn't grow any bacteria. Now, if you stop and think about what that just said was, you can't, and there's regulations, you can't have beyond a certain amount of antibiotic in your milk.
Right.
What they have already done before you even get the results of what happened to your tank of milk, it's already included into a thousands of other gallons of milk.
Right.
So if they find antibiotic in my milk, one of two things are going to happen. Either they're going to dump the milk. In other words, I don't get paid for it. They didn't dump the milk. They put it in a silo. They're not, and I don't get paid for it. Or I just take what they call, if I remember right, it was grade C. Grade. Yeah, in other words, it just becomes surplus milk. And let me tell you what happens with surplus milk after that too. But so let's say I don't get paid. I don't get paid for that tank of milk. However, that milk is in a silo.
Right.
They're going to test that silo's milk because I'm probably not the only dairy that has made a mistake. And so they're going to test that milk in that silo before they do anything else with it, whether they put it into the bottle or the milk carton. Or it goes into cheese or it goes into ice cream. They're going to test that milk in that silo. And certain things have to be within regulatory and processing capability standards. And if they are, then it goes into grade A milk, which is goes into your carton. That's your drinkable milk. Grade C milk goes into your powder and cheese. And so they're going to determine what that silo is going to go do. And so what do I just said there is dilution is the solution.
Right.
My milk may have been too contaminated to grow any bacteria, and actually bacteria, they need to grow bacteria in the processing and making of cheese. And so my milk couldn't have been used for cheese manufacturing. It really should have been dumped in out. But that's not the way it is. It goes into the silo. And if the silo meets the standards by the federal standards or those standards by which the processing can make things happen, then it is going to be used for human consumption. Yet there's still traces of antibiotic, whether it be penicillin, tetracyclines, sulfa drugs, any of those things that we use in the dairy industry. There's going to be traces in there. It's going to get into your milk supply. It meets the standards by which the government is set up, but those standards, you're going to have people sensitive to those. There's no doubt. And so that's what happened.
So they're going to allow a certain percentage of milk that has the antibiotics in it, right? I mean,
that is correct. Okay. And it goes by parts per million.
Okay.
So that's what happens with the antibiotic. That's also, I remember the discussion I had with Star about the pus. And pus is leukocyte, which are white blood cells. There's also a standard, processing standard also, and a governmental standard for leukocytes in your milk. And if you don't pass those standards, you either have to dump your milk, and most of the cases, you have to dump your milk, or it goes into grade C milk, which is your powder milk and your cheeses. And so again,
so we're still eating it, is what you're saying. We're still consuming it.
You are absolutely right. You're still consuming it.
Wow.
Yes.
Ooh-wee.
Dilution is the solution. When you have
ratios
or standards or percentages that are allowed, or parts per million in this case.
That's horrible to me. Okay.
Yeah. Those are
horrible.
Those are things that, and you know, each of those samples, they could not read, at least when I was in the business, they couldn't tell by the sample that they took if your leukocyte count was too high or if your bacteria count was too high. They couldn't tell that. You have to take it to the lab. So by the time you got the results of that, your milk is in everyone else's milk.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do they have like a schedule that they make those tests? And if so, like you said, all this milk that's tainted is going through the system until they check again. And then even some of that is going to get put into it. So, you know, the blind, trusting consumer who thinks that just because they say it's pasteurized, and maybe you can tell us what that means exactly, that the milk is safe for human consumption.
Okay. You have to realize that pasteurization relates only to bacteria. It has nothing to do with white blood cells. It has nothing to do with antibiotic. Pasteurization is strictly a bacteria-killing procedure in milk. And if you have bacteria in your milk, pasteurization is going to kill the bacteria. That's all it's doing. You have to also remember, even after they do that, that doesn't destroy the milk's capability of being a natural medium to culture. And so if you're drinking a lot of milk and you are getting bacteria even from another source, milk will accentuate the growth of that bacteria. So if you get infection by other means, your milk not only depresses your immune system, but it can also help feed the bacteria that you've ingested otherwise.
Wow.
So those are things that. In response to your question. So yeah, pasteurization is only heat treating the milk to kill the bacteria. That is
okay.
So,
I have not heard Sandy be speechless like she is right now for a long time. What are your thoughts, Sandy Rogers, the wellness gangster?
So much information that we take for granted. And I know the solution a few months ago, I said, you know, he's going to come back and tell us that they put whatever and allow whatever into our milk And as long as they dilute it down enough, then they're going to say, oops, it's okay. But then you told me, Tom, that not only that, but if it is really not up to stuff, they grade it from an A to a C and put so people are still ingesting the stuff that's not any good for them. Crazy.
You're absolutely right.
Crazy to me. Ooh wee.
And you know where? And you know where the.
I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
You know where this grade C milk goes?
I was going to say something. So yes, please tell us. That's what I was going to talk about or ask.
Where? Oh, okay. Grade C milk, powder and cheese, winds up in your WIC programs.
That's what I was going to say to poor people. They used to give powdered milk to people on welfare when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And that cheese that never, you know, that cheese, oh, God, that government. They used to call it government cheese. They didn't say it all the way, yep. Government. Government yep. Cheese.
Yep.
You
that's,
know,
that's where
it
goes into the WIC program and it goes into aid programs that go around the world.
Wow.
Yep.
You're breaking up
in there. Okay. And for all of those that put powdered milk in the processed food packages, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. So those are, yeah, that's, I was in the dairy business, and these are the things that we had to concern ourselves with in terms of at the local dairy, but our milk still got into the food supply. Yep.
What is whey? I know it's a milk product, but can you tell us the processing of whey?
Whey is a byproduct of the making of cheese. It is the and I'm it,
oh.
Go ahead.
I said that in that sense, then whey is down real far on the ledge. So because it's a byproduct of the sea. So that knocks it down to a F or G, right?
Yep. And you know, you get whey in your candy bars.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a byproduct of cheese. When I was growing up, most of the whey went down into your sewer system. And then you begin to see more and more places where whey is being used for the food stuff. And that's kind of new for me. Because when I was
they're using it as a supplement for people. They're calling it a protein.
Mm-hmm.
For people to use, especially those that are doing bodybuilding and stuff like that.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. You know, they need
to.
Yeah,
there's
no
protein in it, right?
No, there is 35% protein in cheese. There is 70% fat in cheese.
Oh.
And that's not even counting the amount of salt that's in cheese. I don't know if you watch Forks Over Knives.
I have.
But, yeah, so you remember Dr. T. Colin Campbell tried to duplicate a study that was done in India with mice and protein levels. And the study in India said that if you fed the mice 20% casein, which is the protein in milk,
right,
these mice would develop cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
And those that were fed 5% protein of casein did not.
Right.
So different levels of protein. So, and then T. Colin Campbell, yes, he duplicated that study, and then he also did would vary in the mice in the lifespan of the mice. He would vary the level, maybe a week on 5%, a week on 20%, a week on 5%, a week on 20%. And in each of those cases, as he went to no cancer cell growth at 5%, and each time it went up to 20%, you got cancer growth, cancer cells growth. And then you drop it back to 5 and you would stop that growth. Then you move it back up to 20 and it would start growing again, this cancer cell. This is what milk does to us, and especially cheese. And so that was T. Colin Campbell is, I suppose, you might call a very influential figure in my life because he grew up on the dairy.
Yes, I've studied up pondering.
Yes, and when he went to Cornell and did the dairy work and was researching for the dairy industry, and I paid money to have him do that. Not knowing it, but that's where money went that we contributed out of our milk check in the efforts in which tell you that milk is nature's most perfect food. And
yep.
he subsequently found out after I had quit eating dairy, he subsequently found out that it was bad for you too. So that made me feel better.
Yeah. Well, good. Look, we've got about 15 or 20 minutes or so left. It's actually a little bit more than that, but I know how our conversations have been going. Yeah. So, listeners, if you have a comment or question, you're welcome to join the discussion at 516-531-9819, and you would just hit 1 on your dial to let us know you have a question, a comment, you want to thank Tom for bringing this information or whatever the situation may be. So you need to do that now. Like I said, we're counting down. We got about 17 minutes left in the broadcast. Star and I are going to keep asking questions. So if you want to get yours in, make sure you give us a buzz. And if you're already on, just hit 1 on your dial. Let us know you have something you would like to ask. All righty.
I have something more I'd like
Tom,
to say.
Tom, let me say that again.
I was just going to say there was another thing I was wanting to say about my life in the dairy industry.
Please do.
And my life now. I met my wife. We got married 20 years ago. And in fact, in 2 more days, it would be our anniversary. And
happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Thank you. But one of the things I began to learn there was the effect of that I started in this case. She had already been doing some of these things, but I started at that time studying about health. And at that time, I started learning some things about the dairy industry and about meat and any other animal foods. Now this was, then we had another program about, I don't know, four years later. It's been about 17 years ago now for me. And in that time, At that seminar I went to, they took an ultrasound of my carotid artery. Now, I'm straight off the dairy, straight out of the animal industry, and I went to Las Vegas and married my wife and got into the survey business in this case. And so I was still eating animal foods. And, you know, she was still eating cheese and milk. She just wasn't eating meat, so I discovered I should stop the meat also. But I had this carotid artery ultrasounded. and I had 25% blockage in my artery. Mm. Now, I'm 50 years old at that time. Okay, so I said, okay, maybe there's something to this. So I changed my diet. I didn't get off of cheese. I still ate ice cream. I got off of meat. 7 years ago, I had up here in Portland, we put on a seminar, and we brought in a technician from the hospital, and he ultrasounded arteries of anybody that wanted to have it done, including myself. I had it done then. I still had a 15% blockage. I'm going in the right direction, but that was 10 years later. So it wasn't going fast enough as far as I was concerned. So I quit everything animal. Everything animal. Especially after putting on this seminar that taught me some more stuff. 2 years ago, I had it done again. I didn't have any symptoms. I mean, I still looked thin, you know, like you see on the picture. Still in relatively good shape, but they couldn't find any blockage in my artery. These are the carotid
Woo-hoo!
Arteries.
Yes.
So, but that isn't the end of the story. Right after I had that done, where they didn't find anything. Yeah, that made me feel good. There's no doubt. I'm going in the right direction. I was watching a PBS interview. It was on the PBS channel of an author. Now, I tell you, this author had the same build as me. He even had blonde hair like I did. And they showed him, they interviewed him at age 50. This author would travel around the South by walking, talking about life in the South. And so they had him there, and they showed him. He looked like I did at 50. I mean, he was thin. He was in shape. They had another interview with him at age 60, 10 years later. He looked the same. He looked the same as I did at 60. Still thin. Still looked like he's in good shape. I'll tell you, though, what the reason for the broadcasting of these interviews is 1 month after he was turned 60, he was dead from a heart attack.
Wow.
Dead from a heart attack. Now, I don't know what he ate. I don't know anything about his diet. But I do know what causes a heart attack. And it's that plaque. It's that 25% buildup. Or more had I not switched in those 10 years, that ruptures and stops your blood, whether it be a stroke or whether it be to the heart. That's what happened. So that could have very well been me had I not changed.
Yeah,
and you can't
yeah.
tell. You cannot tell from the outside what's going on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, can you say that again, please, Tom?
You cannot tell from the outside what is going on the inside of your body. We have to take that into our hands and have the doctor take a look for us. It's just an ultrasound. They have that technology. In fact, my daughter develops ultrasound work. And this is actually before she was even doing that. But yeah, looks aren't everything. We have to look.
Well, they got.
I like that.
I think they call it trophy, where you're thin on the inside and no, you're thin on the outside, but fat on the inside. You know,
yes.
People that are thin and look really very healthy, but from the dairy products and all that they eat. They're spotted. They got fat around their heart. They got all this stuff going on, just like you're talking about in their arteries and all of that. So they could be like 20-40% sicker than someone in their family that's overweight.
That's right.
We've got to call. We've got a caller that I want to say thank you for being so patient. The caller has been waiting a couple of minutes, but I wanted Tom to finish the story that he was sharing with us. So our caller is 503-839. Give us your name and your comment, contribution to the conversation, please.
Hey, this is BT. I just want to thank you guys for this show. Hey, how you doing?
Doing good.
I just want to say thank you guys for this conversation. Thank you to the guests. This is a very informative show. This is definitely one that I'm going to have to replay over and over and over just to get all the information. So thank you for this.
You're welcome, BT, for listening.
My question to the guest, and I apologize, I forgot your name, but my question for you, and I know that you deal primarily in dairy, but I just wanted to know what were your thoughts on grass-fed beef as an alternative? I know that that's looked at as a healthy alternative, and non-GMO beef, like up here in the Northwest, we have Oregon Country Beef that says that they have no GMOs, no hormones. What are your thoughts on beef like that, cattle like that?
Thank you for the question. And it's good to hear that you're here in the Northwest also. So,
yeah.
You know, beef, milk, pork, chicken, even the exotic meats that we eat are all animal food. And they're going to do the same thing. What organic means is maybe they're not going to have as many herbicides in it. Maybe it's going to mean there's no added growth hormone. But the effect of all these animal products is still the same on our body. It's still going to create the plaque. It's still going to create the fat that actually becomes the insulin inhibitor, which then leads us to diabetes, which ultimately then goes and gives us renal failure, kidney failure. You know, that's all in the animal products. So whether it's organic and grass-fed, it's just a little bit longer time in which it will affect you. You're not going to be affected then by the excess corn that we were talking about earlier. You're not going to be nearly as affected then by herbicide, et cetera. Those residues could be in the meat or antibiotic residues. So those are what you are avoiding. However, the effect of animal products on your body will still be the same, no matter whether it's grass-fed or not. I don't know if that answers.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, BT.
Thank you for calling in, BT.
Yeah.
There is another thing with that. I don't know if you know anything about alkalarian diets or foods that will cause an acid residue and foods that will cause an alkaline residue in your body. Let me tell you, your body maintains a blood pH of 7.365, 7 being neutral, lower than 7 being acidic, higher than 7 being alkaline. That is as important in your body chemistry as maintaining your temperature. And so when I found out that you can change your blood chemistry by the foods that you eat, I was on board because I hate being sick. What a waste of time being in bed when you're sick. You call in sick when you're well. and by my experience in growing things, especially forage, for the cows. And alkaline soil, the bacteria does not decay. The plant products do not decay in an alkaline soil. It takes an acidic soil to create the decay that puts the nutrients back into the ground. But that's in the ground. What that's saying is it allows the bacteria to flourish. I know bacteria, the wrong bacteria in my body, I don't want to flourish. So if I can eat something that changes from an acidic residue, which all animal products create, to an alkaline residue, which most plant products create, I was on board. And that's what changed me at the beginning. That whole thing was just that fact. I hate being sick. And if I could change that just by the food I eat and what it would cause, I was on board. And that's where I started changing. So, yeah, that's another reason for animal foods. Even if it's grass-fed, makes no difference on those kind of things.
Wow. Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. I work in a meat department for 14, 15 years, and just kind of changing my diet up a little bit, and just seeing a lot of bad things go on in there, and so just try to switch it up, and you've definitely been very informative. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Okay, we're down to about 5 minutes.
Oh.
I got a question.
Tom, okay.
Go ahead, Sandy.
I was just going to ask Tom if there was something else that he wanted to share. He's just filled with all of this knowledge, so I'm wanting to get all of it.
Well, you can always come back again one day.
That's true.
I don't know if I have anything more that I could, we could cover it in the next few minutes, but there is something I would like to know. And I belong to an African-American church. They were kind enough to let me come in as pale-faced as I was. I am. what we want to know, and what I want to know, is how do we get the health message out to people of color that they will hear it? I'm hoping you can help me on that.
That's the intention of this radio show that we do. It's the intention of a lot of the posts that we make and share on Facebook, on our individual pages, as well as certain group pages that we've developed. And my answer to your question is to repeat many times as we can the messages of health and wellness, proper nutrition, and taking care of oneself, because the meat industry, the dairy industry, and the pharmaceutical companies, they're all after our people. And the only way that we can combat that is to repeatedly give messages of life and hope and restoration. That's how we counteract it. Star?
Yes, exactly. And to repeat. Tom, as you and I spoke earlier, we talked about the information that you so readily and so easily flow out of your mouth giving, and the things that Sandy just said that we do on a daily basis over social media, over this radio show. We keep repeating, and, hopefully someone, it's a gift, that's where I'm going with this. And when you give a gift, once you give it to that person, you have to relinquish the outcome. because all we can do is give it to them and then let them make their decision, let them do what they have to do. And, Tom, your wife responded to it. The very last suggestion or comment was from a lady that says, the Bible blesses milk as a food for humans over and over again. I guess the creator of our human body was wrong. And it left me speechless because I didn't know how to respond, if I should respond. And so I let that be a gift from her to me. And I said nothing back because that was her opinion. So what say you, Tom, about that? Because it's part of your religion to eat.
My response to that is it, in the Lord gave us the opportunity and told us at the time of the flood, when everything on earth was destroyed, and before the plants had to come back, you know that Noah in his ark had all the animals that were going to continue living after the flood. Well, there was nothing even for the animals to eat other than the hay that was in the ark. So what were the people to eat? If they ran out of food, they could eat, they were allowed to eat animals, and they were allowed to and eat the and drink the and utilize the milk from these animals. To think that that was the intended original diet, I think is a stretch. Because it was utilized and blessed by God for the people coming out of the flood. And to say that that was the intended diet and it was supposed to be the continued diet, I think is a stretch. I don't think it was ever intended to continue as much as the people wanted it. So, and I think that's borne out even in the story of Joseph. In the story of Joseph, he went to Egypt, sold into slavery. And he came back to his people after you probably know the story. But the point there is what age did he die? He died at about 110, 115 years old, if I remember right. But his brothers and the rest of his family lived to be 150 plus. Now, I think it was around 170. So you begin to ask, why did that happen? And the reason why it happened, as far as I'm concerned, is because Joseph was eating Pharaoh's diet, the same diet that Daniel said,
right,
don't eat.
Preach. That's right.
What a perfect way to end the show. Just absolutely perfect. So we are out of time. We certainly appreciate you, Tom, for coming and sharing so much with us. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
Thank you. Star?
I thank you for the work
you
do.
Oh, my goodness. I am so grateful to you, Tom. Thank you for coming, honey. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
yes,
you.
Indeed.
Yay.
We appreciate it.
We want you back again.
I will see you guys next week. Same time. Tom, be blessed. Be safe. And again, our hearts go out to you for being with us today. Thank you so again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Goodbye,
thank
everyone.
You for all the work you do.
Goodbye. Bye. See you next week.